Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Palimar surrenders the universe. I think I read this yesterday, text 12. Yep. We're beginning today with text 15. Text 14. Shri Shukuvacha Evamaraditam Shisham Anadesha Karam Guru Shashapa Daiva Prohita Satya Sanda Manasvinam. Shri Shukuvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Ashraditam, one who is not very respectful to the instruction of the spiritual master. Shisham, unto such a disciple, Anadesha Karam, who is not prepared to carry out the order of his spiritual master. Guru, the spiritual master Shukracharya. Shashapa, cursed. Daiva Prahitaha, being inspired by the Supreme Lord. Satya Sandam, one who is fixed in his truthfulness. Manasvinam, who was of a highly elevated character. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued thereafter. The spiritual master, Shukracharya, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, cursed his exalted disciple, Bali Maharaj, who was so magnanimous and fixed in truthfulness that instead of respecting his spiritual master's instructions, he wanted to disobey his order. Purport, the difference between the behavior of Bali Maharaj and that of his spiritual master, Shukracharya, was that Bali Maharaj had already developed love of Godhead, whereas Shukracharya, being merely a priest of routine rituals, had not. Thus Shukracharya was never inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to deliver in devotional service. As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, Tesham saratam yuktanam bhajantam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenam amupyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which one they come to me, by which they can come to me. Devotees who actually engage in devotional service with faith and love are inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnavas are never concerned with ritualistic smarta brahmanas. Srila Sanatana Goswami has therefore compiled Hari Bhakti Vilas to guide the Vaishnavas who never follow the smarta vidhi. Although the Supreme Lord is situated in the core of everyone's heart, unless one is a Vaishnav, unless one is engaged in devotional service, one does not get sound advice by which to return home back to Godhead. Such instructions are meant only for devotees. Therefore, in this verse, the word daiva prahitaha, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, is important. Shukracharya should have encouraged Bali Maharaj to give everything to Lord Vishnu. This would have been a sign of love for the Supreme Lord, but he did not do so. On the contrary, he wanted to punish his devoted disciple by cursing him. Translation again. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, continue. Thereafter, the spiritual master, Shukracharya, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, Curse his exalted disciple, Bali Maharaj, who is so magnanimous and fixed in truthfulness that instead of respecting his spiritual master's instructions, he wanted to disobey his order. Prabhupada mentions in this verse the word Buddhi Yogam from Krishna's verse in Bhagavad Gita, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives the intelligence by which one can make progress in spiritual life. And the qualification is that one should be willing to engage in devotional service steadily with enthusiasm. Now we're starting out with a bit of some whatever steadiness we arrived in devotional service with and whatever enthusiasm we have at the moment. But that has to be developed. And therefore there are generally considered three classes of Vaishnavas. First class, second class, and third class. It's not that everyone has to declare themselves to be first class in order to engage in devotional service. It's just like if you want to play a game, I guess the favorite game here is called soccer, football. What's the favorite sport in Slovenia? Of course, the devotees don't know about these things, I guess. Sky jumping. Is that the favorite sport in Slovenia, sky jumping? People are falling out of the sky. I was wondering why there were so many dead bodies on the ground. What's the favorite sport in Slovenia? Skiing. Skiing? Everyone goes skiing here. That's for money. That's a tourist attraction here. Don't they play soccer here? Okay, well, let's take soccer as the example. Just like if you start playing soccer, what's that? We have a climbing. Okay. Well, I'll take soccer as the example. Everyone has their favorite sport. Let's not fight. So when you start out playing soccer, it's not that every time you kick the ball it goes through the goal. But still, you can be declared a soccer player even though you're not a mountain climber, you're not a sky jumper, you're a soccer player because you're at least trying to kick the ball into the goal. And after some practice, then you become considered an expert first-class soccer player when you kick the ball in the goal more than anyone else. But I don't think there's any soccer player who kicks the ball. Every time he kicks the ball, it goes into the goal. That would be, only Krishna could do that. Or some highly empowered personality. So similarly, there's first-class, second-class, third-class Vaishnavas. And the third class Vaishnava goes up to a certain level of spiritual attainment, which if you read the Madhurya Kandambini, you can find out the different stages. It's not that everyone is automatically on the same stage. Everyone in the temple is on one stage. Everyone in the congregation is a different stage. Sannyasis, all of them are on the same stage. If you become a spiritual master, you must be on a certain stage, or else you're disqualified. It's not like that. It's actually depending upon consciousness of Krishna and unconscious or forgetfulness of Maya. And therefore Bhagavad Gita analyzes the stages of consciousness in many different ways so that we can hopefully understand, as Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī says in the Nectar of Instruction, or probably writes in the Nectar of Instruction in his purport, our first business is to find out what other devotees, what level of consciousness they're on. And why is that? Does anyone know? Let's have a moment of silence. We can all meditate. Search our brains. Where is my brain? There's nothing there. There's a dock. I see this cave. And it's all black inside. So, someone was about to say something. Yes, we have to know, well, that's not exactly the right answer, but it's close. It's closer than anyone else's answer. No, in the Nectar of Instruction, chapter 5, Prabhupada writes that at the end of the purport, the last paragraph, that our business our business is to figure out what level of consciousness others are on. And why is that? Why should we? And then the second thing is to find out what level of consciousness we're on. Now, why is it reversed? Shouldn't we find out what level of consciousness we're on and then find out what level of consciousness everyone else is on? Why is that? Anyone have any idea? I don't have a right or wrong answer. We're not going to mark you as, you know. This is called Buddha Yoga. We're supposed to use our intelligence. Why would we want? Yeah, of course. Why would we want to know that? So we can label. You fall and no good for nothing. I always knew you were rotten. You pretender. I tell you to fall into Maya, but you're way below Maya. That's good. That's close. But why would we? What is that called? Begins with an S. S-E-R. B, I, C, it's called service. Our business is service. So we're trying to figure out, our first business is to figure out how to serve different devotees. And even to serve the innocent. So our business is service. That's called, it's called devotional service. And of course it should be with devotion. So, but at least service. So, therefore, we have to find out, if we don't know what others, what level of consciousness they're on, how will we know how to serve them? And if we don't engage in service others, then how are we going to how is Krishna going to be pleased? Now, the second thing is we should find out what level of consciousness we're on. So we know, why should we do that? Aren't we all on the highest level of consciousness? No? I'm surprised. Aren't we always thinking about Krishna all the time? Because after all, every time we see in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, it says devotee, immediately, yeah, that's me. That's right. I'm a devotee. Doesn't matter what I do, I'm a devotee. I have a spiritual name, so therefore I must be spiritual. So why should we find out, why should we want to find out what level of consciousness we're on? What would be a practical reason for that? Yeah, we have to know what's our next stage. If we think, I'm already a Vaishnav, I'm a perfect Vaishnav, then we have no place to go, except for down. Because everything we're gonna do is gonna bring us down. If you think you're already on the highest platform, no one can tell you that you're not, because no one can actually tell you what platform you're really on. And therefore, everything anyone tells you, all your relationships, will all be wrong. Why is that? Because you'll feel offended by everyone. Why don't they treat me like I really am, a first-class Vaishnav? Why are they so fallen and envious? They're treating me like I'm a third-class devotee. Or a second-class devotee. So, due to that lack of knowledge, one will be full of pride. and full of expectations to be treated in a certain way falsely. Therefore, one should understand one's own level. And therefore, we have in our, it's explained in so many different ways. Just like in Bhajana Kriya, we have six levels of Bhajana Kriya. Anyone ever read the Madhuri Kandambini? Anyone going to read the Madhuri Kandambini in the future? This is by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Just want to make sure everyone had two hands here. So it goes, begins with Utsahamayi, then it goes to Gana Tarala. So Utsahamayi means what? Mukunda Madhava. What's that? Yeah, he defines it as puffed up with enthusiasm. Utsaha means enthusiasm. Mayi means false Mayi is more or less like false enthusiasm. Enthusiasm, but it's not, one, that enthusiasm is not completely clear in the sense that one is enthusiastic, but one is overestimating one's actual position due to one's enthusiasm. So therefore it's puffed up, and then he said, puffed up. That means that one joins the Hare Krishna movement. Generally speaking, one, Krishna gives so much mercy to the devotees in the beginning just to encourage them to stay on the path. But then if we mistake the mercy Krishna is giving us to my normal state of consciousness, then we become proud. I came to the Hare Krishna movement, and I was completely in Maya 2 days ago, and now I'm a pure devotee. I'm offering my feet freely to everyone to touch so they can also become a pure devotee, because I notice some of the devotees somehow or another are not up on my level, although they've been around for a long time, but obviously they must be pretenders, so I come here to give them my mercy. 5 rupees to touch. So that's called Utsahamai, puffed up with enthusiasm. And what happens when you join the Hare Krishna movement and you associate with the devotees? What usually happens? The devotees help you get puffed up more? Sometimes when they want something from you, they puff you up a little bit. But what do the devotees usually do? You come to class. How many people get puffed up after coming to class? Yeah, that's right. I always knew it was a Mahabhagavat. He convinced me by logic and reason. How many people get puffed up after coming to class? How many people become more humble after coming to class? How many people wonder why they come to class? What's the goal? No, when we actually find out what our actual position is, then we're supposed to become humble. What is a Mahabhagavat? The greatest devotee is the humblest devotee. So on his path, he didn't start out a little humble, then gradually became more and more proud, and then he became a Mahabhagavat. No, we start out full of pride, and then gradually we make progress in becoming humble. So anyone who doesn't want to become humble, that you're in the wrong place. Because this whole philosophy is meant to help us become humble. At the end, we discover, what do we discover? How big are we? Does anyone know how big the soul is right now? Is it that big? How big's the soul? That big? Well, that's pretty big. 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size. You take a tip of a hair and you cut it 1,000 times, and you take one of those 1,000 pieces, points of the whole, and then you cut it 10 times. That's the size of the soul. Nothing to get too puffed up about. Even your 2/10,000th the size of the tip of hair size. I'm twice as big as you are. So directory. He's become more and more humble. Who's the humblest devotee of Krishna? Does anyone know? Who displays the most humility? Krishna. Some Dhatri? I can't read your lips. The gopis, and amongst the gopis, who is the humblest gopi? Take a guess. Who would be the humblest gopi? You don't sound very convinced. Anyhow, say it with more conviction. What's that? You got it right. You just have to add a little conviction. Imagine Krishna comes to you and says, who's the best gopi? And you go, Radharani? Really? Did you take the Bhakti class? Who? Yes! You got it. She's the humblest. She even thinks, Prabhupada writes in one letter, that she even thinks that some of her gopi assistants are better devotees than she is, and she's learning from them. So humility is a trajectory, and one has to judge partially what one's advancement, one's actual feelings of humility. And then it can go on to Ganatarala. Gana means thick, and Tarala means thin. Which means that one suddenly realizes that sometimes I get puffed up and I fall down. Not that I fall down and I get puffed up. Usually I get proud and then the pride comes. I mean, the pride comes and then the fall down comes. What does the fall down mean? It means I'm walking along, you fall down the floor. No, it means we do something wrong. Although we may think it's right. We do something that helps us forget, that causes us to forget Krishna, and that's considered a fall down. As soon as we forget Krishna, we're considered fallen. That's fallen to Maya, illusion. And what are the two causes of that? Usually it's aham-meti. What is aham? Aham mama-meti. I and mine. This is mine. I am this something, this body or something identification, and these things belong to me. Then we fall, we lose our enthusiasm. Because then we have so many things to control, so many things we want to enjoy that we're not enjoying, so many things we try to enjoy and that we couldn't succeed in enjoying. So the whole realm of hankering, lamenting comes into vision, and we forget Krishna, making our plans, how to avoid problems in the future, and get a good material existence full of sense pleasure and happiness in the future. So that's called by aham. And what is aham meti? I and mine, what is that called? Where does it all begin? What's that? Enviness. Yes, that's true. It's envious. Enviousness is the whole. But how does the enviousness manifest itself? What's that? That's a little down the line. That's a few steps down the line. It begins with, according to Prahlad Maharaj, Pumsa Sriya Maituna Bhavan Etam Tara Mitra Granti Mahu Ato Griya Kshetra Sutapta Vitara Janasya Moho Yam Ahang Mameti. That is Pumsa Sriya. We try to imitate Radha and Krishna. As soon as sex attraction, basically speaking, material world is based upon sex attraction. I am Tarzan and you are Jane. I am Mickey Mouse, you are Minnie Mouse. I am Romeo, you are Juliet. I am Krishna, you are Radha. So the whole material world is based upon that. That attraction between man and woman is the basic principle of our fall down. And therefore the Vedic culture tries to divide men and women up. And materialist culture tries to make men into women and women into men. And something in between. Everyone falls in between eventually into. So materialistic culture is meant to unlimited sense gratification based upon, basically speaking, just lording it over. Man is supposed to lord it over woman, but woman is actually has a way of lording it over the man. But it's all kind of like it's a play. Some people just try to directly lord it over, and some pretend that I'm actually a servant, and that way they lord it over. Take me, I'm your servant. Watch out. And then, Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavami Tayor Ridya Gran. Then there's a knot in the heart. Maya starts playing around with us. Then we get from the contemplation of the senses, then from the attachment develops, and that's where it all begins, that attachment. You are mine, and I'm yours, and we are together forever and ever. Okay, and then all the plans come about, then the land. Nowadays people here in Slovenia, I guess they have a little garden. And they get their house, their flat somewhere, and then their expansions. The intelligent ones are called their plenary expansions, and their less intelligent children are their partial expansions. And they get their Garuda in terms of a car. And they expand their kingdom. As Krishna is ever expanding the spiritual world, so in the material world, everyone wants to expand their kingdom. And Janasya Moho Yama. In order to do that, one has to become more and more entangled in this conception. I am this body, and the things belonging to this body or in relation to this body are mine. And Krishna consciousness means to gradually become free from these things by engaging things more steadily in Krishna's service within our realm of influence with enthusiasm, which is the basic principle of love. Care, and then enthusiasm, and then affection, and then love. To do things carefully, and then with some enthusiasm, carefully doing it, then enthusiasm will develop as Krishna reciprocates with us, and we become more conscious of Krishna, then we feel transcendental pleasure in his association, and then from enthusiasm comes affection, and we see how loving Krishna is, and eventually our natural love for Krishna will manifest and blossom. So step by step, Gana Tarala, sees that I'm not the greatest living entity that ever manifested itself in this universe or any universe, and then one becomes a little humble, and one becomes a little steady, and then one thinks, well, let me go for take a little vacation in Maya for a while. And then, and then one starts analyzing, wait a second, I'm going up and down like a yo-yo. Why am I going up and down like a yo-yo? Can someone help me? It's a little unpleasant. So the next thing, viyuta vikalpa, war against sense gratification. So then one starts realizing that, you know, I'm not so strict. Maybe that's the reason that I'm making so many plans in the future to how to become happy in this world, and therefore that's what my consciousness is going up and down like a yo-yo, because sometimes I want to be renounced and sometimes I want to enjoy, and I haven't figured out which one I really want to do. Therefore it's a war going on in my mind. Should I renounce or should I enjoy? Not that should I think about Krishna, that's way down the line for me. It's renounce or enjoy. So as it goes on, then one starts analyzing what is actually impeding me from actually remembering Krishna and being at least steadily engaged in sadhana bhakti with some enthusiasm. Now it's time for Mangalarti. I'm like, God, I gotta go. At least I gotta satisfy my false prestige, you know. If I don't go, people will start doubting whether I'm the best devotee in the temple. All right, I'll go. I'll put myself there. Oh, Krishna, I dare you to make me Krishna conscious. Didn't do it yesterday. Let's see if you can do it today. So at least steadiness in moving the body around, so it appears. Especially during japa. Oh, japa, my God. 16 rounds. This is torture. I thought this was supposed to be blissful. My mind was so peaceful until I started to chant. Then, oh, torture. God, I gotta get out of here. Maybe I should just cut my rounds down today. We'll go faster. Wow, that was a quick one. I feel so much better. So one has to control one's mind a little bit and analyze, what am I doing here? Is the holy name really torturing me, or is my mind torturing me? Do I really want to live with this mind forever? So every time I try to do something spiritual, it tells me, oh God, this is horrible. You're being tortured, you know, show your independence. Get determined. Leave immediately. You have free will. You don't have to be here. You're not a slave to the holy name. It's just a vibration like anyone else, any other vibration. Anyhow, we can go on, but we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the lecture explanation. I would like to ask maybe this one question on Shukracharya.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't hear. Maybe they ask already. But I didn't hear because I read this that. Krishna Avatara took birth on the family lineage of Shukracharya.
Who took birth?
They said Krishna Avatara. Krishna.
Who said that?
I was just asking because
Krishna Avatara. He descends from the moon planet, the dynasty of the moon.
Okay.
Ramachandra, he descends from the dynasty of the sun. Shukracharya, I don't know what dynasty he has.
Mm-hmm.
Shukracharya is generally, as it says here, he's a ritualistic priest. But anyhow, he doesn't.
Dharma Shastra for the demons is it seems to be like completely the opposite than Dharma Shastra for.
Well, I wouldn't say it's opposite.
Is the same. Like
not necessarily, no, it's not the same, but it's not opposite. In the sense that in the progress of devotional service, Krishna says, tesham, of just coming to devotional service, he says, tesham, yesham antikatam papam, janana punya karmanam, te dvandva moha niramuktva, bhajante mam dhrida vrataha. Those who have practiced pious activities in previous activities, and in this lifetime, who have given up sinful reactions and are free from the duality of delusion, engage themselves with my service with determination.
Mm-hmm.
So to come to the platform of liberation, the first thing is called religion, of which both the demons and even the devotees, they adhere to different extents. For instance, religion means truthfulness, and austerity, mercy, and cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
So even the Shukracharya, who's on that level of teaching basic religious principles, you know, that's in the Shastra, how to regulate the senses. But beyond that, then there's the question of those who practice religious principles who have acted piously. So even the demons come up, they generally don't come up so much to the level of piety, which is ultimately devotional service. Although, for instance, they do sometimes, like Jarasandha was very pious in giving charity, although he was a demon, because he didn't accept Krishna. So, you know, when you're in the material platform of consciousness, which is, you know, extends from performing devotional service out of stress, distress, trying to get free from the reactions of our sinful activities, to acting piously, as the Vaishyas do, protecting cows, to developing inquisitiveness and knowledge to become a disciple of the Brahmins. Even Jarasandha was like that, giving charity to the Brahmins. To actually becoming liberated from material conceptions. This is all within the material realm of consciousness. So this is all within the realm of what ritualistic priests and others, Brahmin priests, are doing. But transcendental is pure devotional service. which is what, for instance, Brihaspati who's gives. Anything else?
There's two more.
Okay.
Some devotees don't look to lose enthusiasm from the beginning they came to the temple. How long Utsahami can last? 10 years or more, or even forever?
Well, forever is a long time. And if I said forever, probably none of us will check me up and find out. forever came and went by. And, wait a second, you made a mistake. I've been here with Utsahami. And it hasn't been forever, nearly forever. No, everything lasts as long as we want it to. We're not forced to give up Utsahami. Matter of fact, the whole material universe is going on with pride. Everyone is proud. I'm the queen of the ants, or I'm the king of the ants, or I'm the most. I can hold the biggest leaf amongst the ants. Everyone's proud. So when we come to devotional service, if we come not for the point of view, not from the idea, if we don't somehow or another imbibe the idea that I have to get rid of pride, is not my friend, it's my enemy, then we may even develop pride. We may get different positions to fan our pride. I joined the movement, I was just a mere bhakta, and then I worked hard and I got initiated. Now I'm in charge of so many bhaktas. I became a good bhakta leader and then maybe the temple commander. Now everyone salutes me because I'm the commander. Now I become the temple vice president and then the president, and I'm going upwards. Soon I'll become sannyasi, guru, and Shaktivesha avatar. Only time separates me. A little more practice. So one can become like Daksha. Daksha was head Prajapati. He walked into the sacrifice, and everyone stood up, all the demigods stood up, because he was effulgent, except for Lord Shiva, and I guess Brahma didn't come, and Vishnu didn't come, but Lord Shiva didn't come. He came, and he didn't stand up. So Daksha became angry. Why aren't you standing up? Everyone else is standing up. Why aren't you standing up? So he was proud. He didn't understand Lord Shiva's position, didn't understand his position. He thought they were standing up to him. They didn't realize they were standing up because he was an empowered servant of Krishna. Because Krishna was empowering him to do a certain service. And therefore, actually the respect belonged to Krishna, not to him. And then he was proud and he fell down, got a goat's head. So it could last for a long time. And it could go really quickly. Depends on who we're associating with, what our motivation is. Who we take as an example. If we take someone who's proud as our example to follow, we may learn many things from them, but we also have to take as an example devotees who are advanced, but they're also not proud, or more humble than we are at least, understand more clearly their position, and therefore don't try to take credit for what they're doing, but give the credit to Krishna and his representatives. Anything else?
Does the soul begin to increase when one starts devotional service? We know sannyasis are great souls.
Great souls. Sannyasis. Does the soul begin to increase?
Begin to increase when one starts devotional service.
Well, it's compared to watering a seed. But actually that seed is sadhana bhakti. But the soul in the spiritual world, he manifests the spiritual body. But there, exactly how big he is, doesn't really matter. Because everything is relative anyhow. He can be whatever size Krishna wants him to be. He can be in the spiritual world or he could be here. Hanuman came and when he had all mystic powers. So when he had to, when he fought against Kumbhakarna, then he manifested the same size as Kumbhakarna. So for the soul, it doesn't really matter. If Krishna wants him to be in the atom with him, then he's that small. And if he wants him to be, you know, bigger, like Hanuman or someone, then he can manifest whatever size. When Narada Muni goes to the heavenly planets, he's the size of the demigods. And when he comes here, if he was the size of the demigods, no one could see him. Be too big. So therefore he manifests a different size. Kuala Grantarashimad Bhagavatam Kidash.